And now I'd like to go ahead and introduce our main speaker, Tony D. from Los Angeles. Welcome.
Okay. Hello. My name is Tony, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And it's funny. Annette at dinner was saying to me, you know, how long do I need to speak for? And she said, you know, like, you know, maybe 45 minutes. And I was like, oh, okay, 45 minutes. And then she just told me, well, it went a little bit over, so now you only have about 40. And I'm thinking, what the hell did that extra five? You know, at first I'm like, I'm thinking, there had to be that many birthday people here? My God, you ate into my time. I mean, happy birthday to the birthday people, you know. No, I mean, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I really do. No. I, as is the case, this never fails, so I always say it. When I was first asked to speak here, literally that day, I sat down, as I do all the time when I'm asked to be the big speaker at a meeting, or the long speaker at a meeting, I start figuring out what I'm going to say. And that very first draft that I come up with, I mean, and I mean this in the most humble way possible, was fantastic. I'm not kidding you, it was. You know, I'm coming up on 26 years of sobriety, so let me tell you, it was really good. And I learned a lot of stuff in 26, almost 26 years. But, you know, but then what happens is because I'm really, you know, a really good alcoholic, I go about the business of trying to make it more better. And, and I keep tinkering so that literally the day of the event, this morning when I was in the shower, I was like, oh my God, what the hell was I going to say? I heard there was something really cool I was going to say, but I wanted to step. So anyway, so because of that, and because that always happens, so I try to the best of my ability to just speak as honestly as I can and as humbly as I can. And with joy, because I identify as a grateful alcoholic, because I'm grateful I figured out, or I was figured out what the problem was. You know, I was one of those kids, one of those guys who always just thought that people were smarter than me, because to be around some people, like, you know, she said Los Angeles, but that's where I wound up. I originally from Harlem in New York, yay. But, you know, hey, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, I just always used to see people, they would always have like a quick answer to something. And I'd say, how come I, and I always felt like, you know, maybe, you know, as I learned more about life later on, you know, metaphysically, that I was in the previous life, you know, in that way station before we come here, I guess, I just, you know, like, I missed that class, you know, where you got that, like, you know, and it's a thing that drives me crazy until AA, you know. And one of the things that I learned that I'm most grateful for in AA, one of the things I'm most grateful for in AA is that, and my ex-wife was very helpful with this, and, you know, I mean, we have no, she's having a really tough time right now, but she's a really good person. But, you know, it was about, I had a guy when I was like 2 years sober. This is when I was 2 years sober. And it was this young kid. He was like 25 years old. And he wanted somebody thrust him upon me. So he just, let Tony be your sponsor. And I hadn't sponsored anybody really at that point. I was like a year and a half, maybe 2 years sober. And I hadn't sponsored anybody. So he's my sponsor. I'm a sponsor, and I'm talking to this kid. And I had like a year and a half, and he had like, you know, 2 weeks. And so we're driving in the car, my car, and you know, I was talking to him and telling him, you know, get the big book of the 12 and 12, you know. I'm not one of those 90 meeting in 90 days kind of guy, you know, because I remember my sponsor, we always knock heads on this. He'd say, well, you know, you go to 90 meetings, because I got sober. It took me like, I was sober like at least maybe 90 days or 100 days before I came to my first meeting. So he says, well, you go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I said, because, you know, I didn't see it in the book anywhere. And he said, well, you go to 90 meetings in 90 days because you drank and used every day. And I said, well, I really didn't drink and use every day. So I don't know why, you know, that was just rebellion, you know. Rebellion dogs are every step. But anyway, so this kid, he's in the car with me, we're driving, he goes, you know, I just want to know, he goes, what are you doing this for? He goes, well, you know, what are you taking your time? Because he's a street kid from Detroit, I'm a street kid from Harlem, New York City. You know, I'm Sicilian, he was Irish, and we were, you know, we were in the car, and he goes, what are you doing this for? What are you taking time to do? So not me being, you know, a really good AA parrot, I said, well, to keep what I have to give it away. And he goes, what the hell does that mean? You know, and again, the New Yorks, you know, came out, and I'm driving, and I made up some cockamamie story, because I had no idea what it meant. But rather than look like a fool, you know, to this kid who I'm like suddenly, you know, I have all this knowledge, a year and a half, you know, and I'm like, so I made up some crazy story. He looked at me, gave me this look like, you know, if you lived on the streets, you know, if you hung out with street people, you knew what that look was. Like, I know that's like total BS, but I know less than you, so I don't know how to, you know, pull your covers on it. So he just gave me this look like, yeah, all right, man, you're sure, you know. But I remember I went home and I was sitting on the edge of my couch. And I was like Rodin the thinker, and I'm like sitting there feeling so terrible that I lied. I basically, you know, I could say I embellished my explanation, but it was a lie. Embellish is one acute word that you can say so you don't feel so bad about your lying. And no, but it works. You know, what any port in a storm, as they say, you know what I mean? But anyway, so I'm sitting on the edge of couch, my wife, God bless her, she comes home, and I'm sitting there, and so she says to me, honey, she asked me a question about something. You know, she goes, what do you think I should do? And I remember I was like, I jumped up off the couch. I don't know. Rather than give her some cockamamie story, I said, I don't know. And so she says something to me that I didn't know that I could do. She says, could you think about it? Did you know you could think about stuff if you don't have the answer? I mean, you laugh, but it's the truth. I mean, I'm a college graduate. Who's who in American universities and colleges? And I didn't know that you could sit and think about it. Yeah, you know, so she went into the other room, and I sat there. I stood there in the living room like this. And I was thinking about what she said, and I came up with something. And I went in to the bedroom, and I said to her, I said, well, why don't you try this? And she said, oh, my God, that's great. I'm going to do that. Now, the men might not understand this, but the women, for me at that particular point in my life, because my wife and I would always argue, every time she asked me advice, I would always bark out some stupid thing. But for her to say that to me, I mean, it was better than sex. It really was. I finally felt like, hey, I've arrived. You know, this AA stuff, it might be okay. I don't know. But sadly, you know, we're not together, and she's having a really tough time. But anyway, so that's one of the things that I'm grateful for, is that I'm able to say to people, I don't know when I don't know. And I don't, let me think about it. I mean, again, I'm a New York kid, you know, and for me to let you think, to even remotely think that I was stupid or dumb or didn't have the answer was, I mean, you know, there's an expression in New York, I'd go to the mattresses over that. You know, I'd fight with you tooth and nail before I'd admit that I'm, you know, don't know something. And this was earth-shattering for me, because it opened up. You know what I could say after I don't know, let me think about it? Is that better yet, I could say, I don't know, what do you think? Isn't it amazing when you ask somebody, you know, what do you think? And they go, well, and then next thing you know, the two of you guys are like working in harmony about something, and the next thing you know, you come up with a really good answer to the question, and you can move on. I mean, I'm in the entertainment industry, and my agent, it's now graduated to me saying to people, this is funny, I don't know where this came from, but I would say to people, well, you know, I don't know how to say yes to that. You know, because, you know, as an alcoholic, you know, the first word out of every alcoholic's mouth, no matter what the question is no. You know? No, really, seriously, you know, like, what time is it? No. Oh, hold on a second. Is your name Tony? No. Well, yeah, sure, yeah, of course it is. But, you know, so I say to people, I don't know how to say yes to that. And because, you know what happens, it gives the other person an opportunity to think about things, because as an alcoholic, you know, look, I hate to admit it, but it's true. You know, I'm battling with fear all the time. And I don't know whether to say yes to something, if a fear that it's going to work out the way I hope it would, or it's not going to work out the way it should, or I think it, all of that. And I'm constantly in that no state. And to say to somebody, you know, I don't know how to say yes to this, then gives them a chance to come up with possible solutions for me to say yes to. So I said that to my agent one time, and he said, oh my God, that's fantastic. He goes, because I got an offer for a deal, and I was broke at the time, and I really needed the job, but I said, I don't know how to say yes to this, Scott. And he goes, that's fantastic, because I'm going to use that in a negotiation. So he called up the people, and he goes, my client doesn't know how to say yes to your offer. So they said, well, what can we make him say yes? And he goes, well, if you do a little more money here, a little, and they said yes, and he called me, because I'm going to use this all the time. I love this. He's not one of us, but, you know. But, you know, you spread it, you know, practice these principles in all your affairs. I mean, I don't know for sure if it's a principle, but but I'm grateful. Look, the fact that I can laugh about it today and do, it's nothing short of a minor miracle. And so what I learned in AA, that miracles are, what is it, a coincidence is a minor miracle in which God chooses to stay anonymous. So for who and what my higher power is about, you know, I got these little coincidences that go on all the time in my life if I think about them. If I practice what, you know, Dr. Paul says about an acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I came to AA, let me tell you something. There was nothing that I would accept that I didn't understand. I mean, you know, forget about it. If I didn't understand it, I was intractable. And then I learned, like my sponsor, I don't know if you know him, his name is Marty Warner. You know, he's coming up on 50 years of sobriety. And he would always say to me, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I would, well, you know, sure. I want to be right. And he goes, okay, well, then you're not going to necessarily be happy. He goes, but you can go try to be right. And then I've learned that it's like so much better to be happy than to be right. You know, like I used to say, I'd rather be naive and happy than an intellectual and depressed, because I could do that really easily. You know, I was on the debating team in college, so I can debate you, you know, tooth and nail about anything you want. And a lot of times, even when I didn't know what I was debating, I would be able to debate you, you know, because I just, again, going back to, I didn't want you to know that I didn't know. This has been a strange journey for me. I must talk about my last night drinking, because you know that I reached that place that they talk about in the big book of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And that happened to me that night. And I talk about it because it's possible that if I don't talk about it every time I share, especially when I'm the big speaker at a meeting, I could forget about what it felt like that night. And then as my life gets better or more improved or I'm happier or things are going my way, I might be someplace and, you know, you hear the stories all the time. People with 10, 15, 20 years, 20 plus years that go out because they don't do the work. They don't go to meetings. They don't work the steps. They don't sponsor people. They just, you know, and it's fine. You want to walk around and do that? Go ahead and do it. But that's what happens. And I didn't want to be, you know, one of those guys. But... But anyway, I remember. I'll just tell you real quickly what happened my last night drinking. In New York, when I was in New York trying to pursue my acting career and all kinds of stuff, I got involved in gambling clubs, and I was running an after-hours illegal gambling club. And that was my best thinking. You know, my best thinking was if I do that, then I don't have to work as a waiter or a busboy or a bartender or whatever, you know, or a cab driver. You know, I got drove a cab one time. I got held up and stabbed in the chest. So I said, well, I don't want to do that anymore. I mean, come on. I might get stabbed again, you know. But that was what was going on. And I opened this club, and I developed a $800 a day cocaine habit and a 3-quart a day booze habit. And this is what I was doing for the last 8 months of my journey, you know. And during that journey, at the end of that 8 months, near the end of that whole thing, I wound up owing like about $18,000 to $20,000 to loan sharks and Shylocks. I don't know if you know what those people are like. They're the kind of people that, you know, you've probably forgotten more than they've learned. However, when you owe them money, they'll come to your house if you didn't go to their house to pay them, you know, and they'll break something of yours. They'll break an arm, a leg, you know, both. And if they have to come 2 or 3 times to your house, they'll just kill you. You know, and that was what happened to me in my life. So I was at this place, and I knew that I had hit my bottom. But I went to some meetings in AA in New York, and I did not want to admit that I had a problem with alcohol. I had no problem admitting $800 a day of cocaine. That was a problem. But not alcohol. I can do it. And so I wound up stopping cocaine. I went 90 days without drinking. And then it's like really weird. Like I used to run into people, you all, at different places, and we all have that look. We're almost like, oh, it's not quite like, like a deer in the headlights, but we all have that, or a dog on the freeway. We have that kind of look when we're around other alcoholics, and they can tell. And sometimes they'll say to you out of the clear blue sky, "You're a friend of Bill's?" And I'll just go, Bill. Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, well, and then I'll give them this 15, 20-minute dissertation about, yeah, I used to go to those meetings. I went for 90 days, big deal. I went for 90 days, and I realized that I had a problem with cocaine, but not with a problem with alcohol. So, I'm doing really good right now, and I'm still drinking, but I'm fine. And they just look at you and go, okay, well, good for you, man. That's really great. Good luck, And I must have been so pathetic the way I... But anyway, but as fate would have it, things started to turn around in my life. I got a break. I was out of the club. I was back with my wife. And just things started happening. I gave up the club. I was doing whatever work I could do to pay bills and to survive and to pursue my career. And then I caught this giant break. And it's like the Beverly Hillbillies. I moved away from New York and came out to first to Chicago, then to Las Vegas, and then to California, and things were going really good. And then no more coke, no more drugs ever. The last time I did a drug was like 1984, but I was still drinking. But I couldn't drink three quarts of scotch a day anymore. It had gotten to the point where the only thing I could drink was wine. I just could not drink, I was saying in the car on the way up, my two friends, Joe and Talal, came up with me from L.A., keep me company on the ride. And it was like, if beer were the only thing to drink, I would have gotten sober when I was about 14 or 15 years old. I don't know what the hell's in beer. Beer is where I had my blackouts. I used to joke. I said, if I was a woman and had two beers, I'd wake up pregnant. I have no idea what the hell's in beer. Scotch, I could pound that back all day long and, think that I was somewhat cognizant of what happened the day before. But anyway, so this one day, there was this situation. This is 1993, and this guy said no to me. It's like, it's okay for me to say no to you, but you can't say no to me. And he said no to me, and I remember I was like, I was driving in my car. His cell phone was connected to the car then. Remember those days? he said the generator, it's no. But anyway, I was in the car and I was driving and I was so angry. So I called up my wife and I said, "We're going out to eat. We're going to have lunch." And it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So we went to this place called Fab's, which is in the Valley in Sherman Oaks. And we went to Fab's and I ordered for her, her meal, but I ordered a bottle of Chardonnay. And I poured one glass for her and I had three glasses for me. And I finished the whole bottle with those three glasses. And I remember I was sitting there with my hand on the neck of the bottle, just steaming, because this guy said no to me. If he had said yes, this deal would have moved forward, but he said no, and I'm sitting there, and I'm telling you, it was the closest time in my life I ever got to being literally homicidal. A lot of times you say you're so mad at somebody, I'll tell you, I'll kill you, Like I was such a tough guy. I used to tell people, I used to think when growing up, like I was Sonny Corleone, But in reality, I was Fredo, It's like, I'm smart, what are you talking about? I'm smart, And there I am sitting in this restaurant, just steaming. And the really sad thing was I was ready to take that bottle and hit anybody over the head who bothered me. And it's really cowardly when I think about it. It wouldn't matter if it was a man or a woman. I was nuts. And it was the first time I admitted I couldn't drive the car. And I remember I said to my wife, "You're going to have to drive." Because I realized there's something, it's like something outside of yourself. It's like, God consciousness, whatever you want to call it, that was saying to me, speaking to, there's like the little good angel, and there's the negative angel. And there's the good angel saying, no, you can't drive. And the veteran, drive the car, go ahead. But the car was a weapon. I knew that. So I got home, she drove, and I was gone still. Just three glasses of wine. I used to drink three quarts of booze a day. Three glasses of wine. I am gone, out of my mind. And I'm sitting in the car, and she says, you're going to have to walk this off. And I said, we had this home up in the hills. I said, I'm not going to walk back down to Ventura Boulevard. She goes, you better walk somewhere. So I wound up walking to my backyard, and I am, stewed. I mean, as it is still, on just three glasses of wine, just could not get my bearings, barely knew my name. And I remember I wound up laying on my back next to my pool. Now, I'll describe this house briefly. I had what my friend of mine, a Los Angeles native, said, the perfect California fantasy home. Kidney-shaped pool, view of the valley as far as your hand can see on either sides like that. I mean, just lights for miles, and then the hills in the, during the daytime, the San Gabriel Mountains in the distance and the Cascade. I mean, it's amazing, just amazing. And this was my house. And in this house was this beautiful woman who is my wife, who's now my ex-wife, our cats, two nice cars in the driveway, and I'm laying in my backyard like a Bowery Street bum, all because some guy said no to me. And I'm lying there, and I'm just thinking, I'm looking, I think something is so wrong. And I looked up, and over the neighboring hillside near Mulholland Estates, there was this moon, the moon was coming up, and it was a full moon. And I'm looking at this moon, and I'm feeling the pain, and I just went, like a werewolf. I'm not kidding. And then, after this one big long howl, two coyotes howled back. Now, I can laugh about it now, but at the time, I thought, this is great. I've become a savage. Wild animals know what I'm saying. They're like, yeah, don't worry, Tony, we'll be right over. Hang on. And I just lied there, and I thought, and, I didn't have a smile on my face, but I was lying there. And I just started to sob. And the sobbing turned to convulsing. I was convulsing tears, and just my body was racked with. And then I heard this voice. And I heard this voice as clear as I can hear my voice speaking to you all right now. And the voice said, you're over. It's over. You're done. You need help. Now, I remember I looked around because I thought it might have been my neighbor, who I found out later on was in AA. But I thought it was my neighbor because I was howling like a werewolf. And there was nobody there. There was nobody. And so I just said, okay. Tried to stand up. I could not stand up. I had to crawl. And this is just three glasses of wine. I'm sure there are people with far greater pitiful and incomprehensible stories about their last time drinking. But I could not stand up. Crawled, got into the house, made a call to a friend of mine who I wound up, he had about 3 years more than I did, but I wound up sponsoring him and, for a while. And so he said, could you stop drinking, for 90 days? Because I said, I need help. And I said, no, he says, you want to go to a meeting? And I said, no, I did that in New York. I'm on the phone. I'm Sicilian. I use a lot of hand gestures all the time. So he says, could you stop drinking for 90 days? And I said, yeah, I did that once before. He goes, do it again. 90 days later to the day, I'm out having dinner with the same guy, and I hadn't had a drink for 90 days. And, and I remember we were out we were eating, and he goes, how are you doing with the no drinking thing? And I said, as a matter of fact, I said, I think it's 90 days today, but I knew that because I had marked every day off on my calendar. So I was literally, I was doing all the stuff in the book. I was counting days. And so he says to me, if you haven't had a drink, he says, let's go to a meeting. And I said, I don't want to. And he says the magic words to me. He says, what are you afraid of? And I remember I looked at him, and I've not ever used this word except maybe as a character sometime. I went, I ain't afraid of anything. And he goes, Popeye, if you ain't afraid, I sound like Popeye the Sailor Man, blow me down. And he said, if you ain't afraid, then let's go. But I was petrified. I was petrified, scared to my core, because I thought I was going to have to go to a place. My dim memory of those meetings back in New York, back in 1984, was that I was going to go to a place and I was going to have to raise my hand and say, hi, my name is Tony and I suck at life. And worse yet, that I don't know how to be a man. But I remembered how I felt that night in my backyard. And I always share that story because right now I remember that feeling exactly. Okay? Exactly what I felt like that night laying on my back. And I said to myself quietly, I said, I don't ever want to feel like that again. So I'll go to the meeting, and if he told me to wear a dunce cap and sit on a stool in the corner of the room, I would have done it. Anything to not feel like that again. So we went to a meeting, and lo and behold, I go to a place that's going to teach me how to be the best Tony I could possibly be, one day at a time, with the simple caveat of that whatever you teach me, I've got to give it to another person. So to keep what I have to give it away. That's what you guys taught me. And I was like, okay, fine. For that small price, I have a different life because of that. Look, I'm not perfect. I mean, nobody is. I mean, I still have, you know, I remember one time, I think I was about like 10 years sober, and there was this guy gave me a ticket, you know, the meter maid or whatever they call those guys, and, you know, can't be a meter maid because he's a guy, so I don't know, meter man. And so he gave me a ticket, and I just thought, well, you can't give me a ticket. I mean, I went completely meshuggah. I mean, I went meshuggah beyond meshuggah. And I mean, I was the kind of person at that point where they, you know, that expression, they shoot horses, don't they? I mean, it was like, we should kill this guy because he's like really gone crazy. This is over a parking ticket, for God's sakes. And this guy was, you can see, he was petrified of me. So then I realized later on, I owed this guy an amends. But how do you find the guy? You don't know. I mean, you know how many meter men and meter maids there are, those cars all driving around the valley, you know? Well, 3 years later, or 4 years later, as fate would have it, I'm out driving and I stop in this gas station. I didn't even live in the valley anymore, but I happened to be in the valley, and I pulled into this gas station on the corner of Coldwater and Ventura Boulevard. And I look at the corner of my eye, and there's the guy. And I said, that's the guy. Because I remember he had like a red beard, you know, and so I get out of my car and I start walking over to him. This is 4 years later. You know what he does? He goes like this. 4 years later. And I said, whoa, no. I, like in the movies, like for People from Outer Space, I mean you no harm. I come in peace. I said, I was a real complete moron, you know, when I yelled at you that day, and I just want to say that I'm so sorry that I did it. And I would, you know, hopefully you can forgive me. I really mean that. I really am sorry. And the guy's like, okay. All right. Yeah, well, sure, okay. I forgive you. I said, gee, thank you so much, you know, but he was still like, is this guy going to attack me? Is this a joke? Is this a ruse just to get at me again? And can you imagine? I mean, see, I couldn't even imagine doing that. When I just, like now, like, you know, like when driving in the car, like, I would say, hey, go screw yourself, you know, follow the guy on the freeway like a lunatic. Driving your car, like, you could hurt somebody, you know, and I'm driving, following people. But now it's like, I've learned, I can still get mad, I just don't roll my window down. As I'm driving, and as they go by, I go, "Hey, you dirty bastard! Yeah, sure. Hey, have a great day, you bastard!" But he doesn't know what I'm saying. He sees me smiling. I can still get mad, but I don't owe him amends. I don't have to follow him to his house. Can you imagine if the guy lived like in Arizona? I'd follow him to Arizona to say I'm sorry. So you know, I don't want to do that. Like my sponsor said, you make amends because you get to the point where you say, you know, I'm sick and tired of screwing up all the time because I hate making amends. So you try to you know, pause when agitated, you know? And I mean, I don't do it perfectly, but I try. And, you know, and it's like, I didn't know that I could do these kind of things. I just had no idea that you could do this. And, you know, I know I'm getting near the end of my time, and there's so many things I wanted to talk about. But one of the things that I want to talk about is that I realize that I'm going through some stuff right now in my life, which is just, I mean, it's really, it's just, ooh. And it's because I'm not getting what I want, you know? And I think that the world owes me something. And I think that the war cry of the alcoholic is, but you don't understand, you know? But it's really, but I don't understand. And the other, the caveat or the add-on to that is, but you know, it's like, it's kind of like, well, that's not fair. I mean, how many times have you said that as an alcoholic? I know I said it a lot. You know, that's not fair. This is not fair. This is not fair. And so it's just not fair. So I'm not getting what I want because it's just not fair. And you know, and I say this to people all the time. People I sponsor, people I work. I have this interesting way of working the sixth and seventh step that I just stumbled across in my life, just doing it so many times with different sponsees. And that is that on step seven, there's that paragraph, next to last paragraph, where it says, the chief activator of all of our defects has been primarily fear. Fear that we're going to lose something we have or fail to get something that we demanded. I might be paraphrasing the rest of it, but living upon a basis of unsatisfied demands, no peace of mind can be had until we can find a way of reducing those demands. And it says the difference between a demand and a simple request is plain to anyone. Well, it wasn't plain to me. And I realized what had happened is I want something, okay? And if I'm not careful, this alcoholic mind, you know, which will go where no Tony has ever gone before, you know, and cause all kinds of, I mean, you know, you think about it, like Captain Kirk, he was nuts. This guy kept making mistakes and everybody had to get out of the mistakes he made, you know, and that was me. But it was like, you know, I got to the place in my life where I just realized that I couldn't do this stuff anymore. I just couldn't do it that way anymore. And life started to I lost my train of thought here, but maybe I'll get back to it. But let me go on to this because I don't know what it was, but it was really good. He confused me, this guy up on the ceiling over here. No, he was like, enough. He's like, enough, you know? But, anyway, I have several heroes in my life, okay? I'll end with this. I have several heroes in my life. And 5 minutes?
Interesting, sixth and seventh step, you were talking about the in-between. You have an interesting way
I have this interesting way of realizing. Thank you so much.
I'm dying to know.
God bless you. No, I have this way of like realizing that the difference between a demand, okay, and a simple request, a demand happens for me. I don't know if it happens the same for you, is I have a want. And very cunning and baffling and powerfully, I turn it into a need. And when it becomes a need, I mean, you need to breathe, right? But if you don't need to really have this thing that you want, I mean, it would be nice to get it. I mean, if I got all the things I wanted right now, I'd fall through the floor. But, I mean, you know, you get to the place where you just, I want it. And you suddenly, very, very carefully, it turns into a need. And when it becomes a need, it's a demand. And you make these demands upon everybody in your life, including yourself. Like this guy, Leo Sullivan, who's a good friend of mine. He's now passed on, Leo. He used to say to me all the time when I'd call him, you know, he'd go, what does little Tony want that big Tony's not getting for him? and that's what it is. It's little Tony all the time. You know, little Tony wants something. And it's okay to want this stuff, but just when you get... I mean, I know I get to the point now where I can identify that feeling. I mean, not like right away, but I can identify it pretty quickly. And then immediately I go through whatever process I have to go through in the sixth and seventh step to like get out of that place and go to the place of saying, you know what? Whatever it is, it'll come. It'll come. You know, it just may not come right now. And it's okay. And I'm going to survive and everything's going to be okay. My dad used to say that to me all the time. Everything's going to be all right, Anthony. I mean, he's gone, my dad. But he would say that to me all the time. Everything's going to be okay, Anthony. And when he would say that to me, I don't know. I just knew that everything was going to be okay. And so sometimes I have to like hear his voice saying to me, everything's going to be okay, Anthony. And it's like, and it does. It's not as quick as I would like, but not as long as I think. Okay? That's the magic of it. It's not as long as you think, but it's not as quick as you like. And, you know, thank you, sir. I appreciate that so much. I have heroes. And one of my heroes is a guy named Will Shakespeare. You know, he wrote the greatest play ever written in the history of mankind, maybe the greatest piece of literature in the history of mankind, called Hamlet. And all it is about a guy who can't make up his mind. And he, really, seriously, and he drives everybody nuts. Does it sound like an alcoholic to you? I used to be like that. You know, I still am to lesser or greater degree, depending on the situation. You know, if I want something and I'm not getting it, it's like, I drive everybody crazy. You know, do I really need it? Do I want it? That happens to me. And the other guy I like a lot is a guy named Charles Dickens. Great Expectations, right? Aren't Expectations Resentments Under Construction? So, I mean, you know, he wrote to us about it. And, you know, and then the other thing, you know, the Tale of Two Cities, the best of times, worst of times. Isn't that like how we wake up some in the morning? My fear's in my bed. No, fear's not going to be. It's going to work out. I'm going to have a good day. I'm not going to have a good day. Best of times, worst of times. And then Mark Twain, Tom Sawyer, he conned all these guys into help paying him money so that they could paint his aunt's fence. Think about it. I used to pull scams like that in New York. You know, and I'm an alcoholic, so maybe Tom is too. You don't know. I mean, it's possible. You just don't know. But the guy that I like the most is a guy who's not really a writer of fiction. Is a guy named Joseph Campbell. And he writes about the journey of the hero. And that the hero is facing, you know, these whatever. I mean, these horrible situations. And he's confronted. He or she is confronted with these situations. And you get to a point where they are in that moment literally sucks so bad that they decide, I'll go down that long, dark hallway. I don't know where it's going to go, but anything's got to be better than how I feel right now. Just like I was laying in my backyard, the pitiful looking incomprehensible, the more anything's got to be, anything got to be better. I don't care what happens in a dunce cap, doesn't matter. I got to go there. And I get that chance to be a hero every day in my life. We all do. Male, female, doesn't matter. You get to be a hero. And sometimes I want somebody else to be the hero for me. I don't want to have to always do the work. But you know, at the end of the day, when I do the work, and it's like, you know, if you were a baseball player, you got to realize that no matter who you are, even if you're Ted Williams, I was talking about Ted Williams earlier today with Joe and Talal, even Ted Williams didn't bat 1,000. The greatest batter in the history of the game, So all you got to do to bat 300 and make it to the Hall of Fame is just get 3 hits out of every 10 pitches, the 10 at-bats that come to you. I get more than 3 hits a lot of times. I get, you know, much more than 3 hits in a particular day. But I don't always bat 1,000. But I can get really close to it. And when I do, I got to tell you, I feel pretty damn good. Anyway, I think my time is up. So I will say this as I leave the podium, which I always do, and Joe was teasing me about it before. My mom and dad, they're Sicilian immigrants. They're both gone. And they are my real heroes, okay? We were at odds with each other for a long time, and then we found a way. Even before I got sober, we found a way to come together. And they're both gone. But they had this thing that they, in Sicily, it's part of the old colloquialism of the language in Sicily. So it's a little hard for the translation. But when you want to say to somebody that they're the greatest thing that ever happened in their life, and that them being in your life was beyond, they're the bomb in your life, so to speak. When you see them, you'd grab their hand. Usually you would take with 2 hands, and you would hold the hand and you would say to them, San Benedict, which basically is saying to them, may the blessings of everything that's holy, may all the saints, Jesus, everything, bless you. Okay? I'm not a religious guy, but this to me is like a really spiritual thing. And it's like, San Benedict. My mom and dad used to do that all the time. And they're my 2 heroes. So for how my life is today, and for the things that I'm going to learn, and that I have learned and will continue to learn, I say to you, all of you, for helping me with this, San Benedict, and thank you for my life.
Let's give Tony Wendy.